Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air. This is the program on topics of fatherhood and masculinity, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network from the studios of Fine Music 102.5. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hi, Bill, and hi to everyone again.
And our special guest today is Alan Sampson. Alan Sampson is the winner of the 2015 Finch Memoir Prize. And we have a special thanks to Finch Publishing, who have given us a book to give away to a lucky listener. So to be in the draw, to go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. And the book we're talking about is Schools of Fish. First of all, let's welcome our guest, Alan. Welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
So, Alan, you've your first attempt at a memoir. You've come up with the big prize. It must have been exciting for you to get the news that you'd won.
Yes, indeed, it was a surprise. I don't know if I mentioned to you in a previous chat that I've actually written a book before, but it was called Our Place in Space, and it was a couple of decades ago, and I thought it was going gangbusters in terms of sales until I visited my parents on the Christmas holidays and opened one of the cupboards and found about 300 books.
Don't you love family?
Yeah, which consisted of 90% of the sales, so hopefully this one will do a little bit better.
Okay, so we're starting on a fairly low base, I'm sure.
Yeah.
winning that prize is a great start. Now, the book is really about your personal growth as well as the relationship with one of your children, your son, Greg in particular. But perhaps you could just tell us about that start when you first hit a school with 900 students and you were told you had to take command.
I suppose the mix of emotions that come with a marriage breakup and sorting out, you know, where the children go and, you know, who takes custody, etc., mixed with a new school that was quite a challenge, made me reflect and rethink on my approaches.
Yes, you really had to juggle quite a few balls, didn't you, with the difficulty with the family breakup. You had a tough school to work at, and you had the triple header was dealing with your own son who had some learning disabilities.
That's true. The actual school was in one of those troughs that occasionally schools get into. It had a previous reputation as being a great school, and I just entered into one of the chapters when it was at a low ebb. But it had a lot of potential, the raw materials were there, and after a while we managed to move it forward.
And part of that was that you had to have a show of authority. Now, I think you've sort of changed your views a little bit on that now, but that using your authority, being the strong man, it certainly achieved results, didn't it?
It certainly did, and I suppose if I could take you back a little bit, I remember when I was about 12 years old playing around in the bushes with my younger brother, and I was the Lone Ranger and he was Tonto, and we were chasing imaginary villains. And I think my father was getting enough of this and wanted me to grow up a little bit, so he said, "Listen, mate, here's an autograph book. I want you to go and get some quotes from people you respect, and I'll write a little snippet in this autograph book." And he wrote, "Love many, trust few, learn to paddle your own canoe." And as I reflect on that, and it was probably the only autograph I got in the book, by the way, I think there was another one, Mary Rose sat on a pin, Mary Rose, and I didn't get that for a couple of weeks, so that shows my academic prowess at that time. So, love many, trust few, learn to paddle your own canoe. But all I did was grab my father's canoe. I didn't really have my own canoe, and I adopted his model of parenting. And I seemed to do the same thing with principalship. I just looked at the principals that I had something to do with and followed their models. And I found both of those models, or I found their canoes totally inappropriate when it came to dealing with my own son in my own school. And that's where the clash was, and that's where I had to change tact and build my own canoe, so to speak.
Hmm. The school you mentioned, it might have been described as a bad school before you took control there. And do you think a bad school has mostly to do with the teachers, or is it some other factor?
Well, I think it is the spirit of a school that that pushes it forward. It's very much the culture of the school. I think every human being, teacher, student, parent, has incredible capacity, and it's whether we can dig into that treasure chest, whether we can motivate them and get them to connect and build the relationship. So I think the first step was getting people to realise the strength they had and the capacity to change people's lives. There's an old cliche that, you know, that you see in marketing about education. It says teachers make a difference, but some teachers don't make a difference because they don't realise that, you know, the real strength that they have sitting in their profession.
I would think that the principal has a big influence over the school too, because the principal's the one leading the school and setting the direction and helping to define the culture.
Certainly there is an influence, but the greatest impact on changing an individual is the relationship between the teacher and the student. And I think that only comes second to, you know, the parent and the child.
Sure.
So I certainly had a role in shaping up or scaffolding the culture, but if I didn't have the quality of the raw materials in the teachers, I would have been going around in circles. So it was trying to draw on that spirit of connection. And look, I think there was a futures writer called Ian Slaughter that said that a school is really a blueprint for tomorrow, that what you build in a school is what you want to see in tomorrow's world. And we've got a little bit sidetracked in the past because we've said that let's focus on academia and let's focus on potential Olympians. So you'll see a lot of the marketing of schools is about, you know, the NAPLAN results or the amount of students that have gone on to be elite athletes. But the 70% of students often get missed and are just left to find their own way. So it was trying to build a culture that gave everyone a sense of self-esteem and connected to the pride of the school, and that's where we began.
Just reading your book about your authoritarian stage, it reminded me a little bit of Sound of Music, with the military rules and the whistles. And I,
yes, indeed.
Did it carry on to your life at home with your own children?
Yes, it was fairly rigid in terms of the structures at home. You know, it was my dad's approach was if there was any drama at home, he'd come home. Mum would say, hey, the kids have been mucking up. You know, I'd get four more straps than my younger brother because I was 4 years older than him, and Dad really didn't analyse the cause, but he just went to the, you know, this is the line in the sand, guys, and that's how it played out. So I suppose that in my approach to my own children, I was very rigid, very, you know, wanted to instill that competitive edge in them. And as a result, you know, Greg was the one that tested those boundaries in the end.
Yes, that brought its own challenge because you found out after a little while, I mean, it wasn't when he was first born, but it became obvious that he had a reading problem.
That's right.
And that affect your whole outlook on the relationship with your children.
Indeed, the three older children sailed through the traditional structures of school and did reasonably well academically and in the sports field. However, Greg just kept hitting walls because of his challenge, and really very few people, including principals, understood what dyslexia was all about. They just automatically inferred that the kid must be dumb, so to speak. So, you know, he was put in his own little category, And I knew just in what he'd done and how he spoke, how he presented in just his oral literacies, that there was something more, you know, that it wasn't a matter of academic ability or intelligence. It was some block where, you know, the synapses just didn't connect in this particular way. So.
Yes, we want to come back and talk some more about that special relationship between Alan and his son, Greg. And we're speaking with Alan Sampson, the author, the prize-winning author of Schools of Fish, a new memoir that's out now. We're going to take a short break now, and this is a song about a topic that I know is near to our guest's heart. It's Surfing by the Beach Boys.
Surfing is the only life, the only way for me. Now surf, surf. With pom-pom, dip-de-dip, dip-de-dip, pom-pom, dip-de-dip. I got up this morning, turned on my radio. I was checking out the surfing scene to see if I would go. And when the DJ tells me that the surfing is fine, that's when I know my baby and I will have a good time. Going surfing, pom-pom, dip-de-dip, dip-de-dip, pom-pom, dip-de-dip, pom-pom, dip-de-dip, dip-de-dip, pom-pom, dip-de-dip, pom-pom, dip-de-dip. Surfing is the only life, the only way for me. Now surf, surf with me.
Pop, dip, 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 pop, pop, dip, dip. From the early morning to the middle of the night, anytime the surf is up, the time is right. And when the surf is down to take its place, we'll do the surfer stomp. It's the latest dance craze.
Surfing is the only life, the only way for me. Now surf, surf with me.
Now the dawn is breaking and we really gotta go. But we'll be back here very soon, that you better know. Yeah, my surfing knots are rising and my board is losing wax, but that won't stop me, baby, 'cause you know I'm coming back.
Surfing is the only life, the only way for me. Now come on, pretty baby, and surf with me, yeah. We're back with Dads on the Air.
And that was the song Surfing by the Beach Boys. We're speaking with Alan Sampson, the author of Schools of Fish, the winner of the 2015 Finch Memoir Prize. So, Alan, we were just speaking about your relationship with your youngest son, Greg. Now, he was born some 7 years after the previous child, so there was a sort of a difference right from the start, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. He was, so to speak, the afterthought. And he obviously looked up to his older siblings and he wanted to be their equal rather than their younger brother. So from the start, he had that challenge, I suppose. And, you know, with the frustration of dyslexia, it presented an even greater challenge to him as an individual. He wanted to achieve their achievements and he wanted to be similar, but he just couldn't get over that hurdle of, reading disability.
It's different from other types of disability, isn't it? Because, to look at him, he's a picture of health, and he has so much going for him, and yet he has this difficulty in reading and in getting on at school. So, mind you, others seem to be over it. There's been a suggestion recently that someone as august as Paul Keating has suffered from dyslexia. But how does it affect the day-to-day life of Greg?
I think because we were in traditional parameters of, you know, you will read this, Greg, read page 52 now. And obviously it was like reading Japanese, you know, a foreign language when he had to go through that process. And that was part of the traditional approach to literacy, I suppose. But, you know, the recent research would indicate that dyslexia can be a gift, you know, that it has got no correlation to intelligence. And in fact, a lot of dyslexic people have a greater gift in terms of visual codes and visual literacy. So, and creativity has never been a challenge for Greg. He's always got, you know, good ideas, and he's got a wonderful sense of adventure. In fact, he's over in the Yukon at the moment, and I'm going over in a few weeks. And he's got a 10-day canoe trip down the Yukon River planned for he and I, you know, a canoe each, and his dog. And this is where I start to worry, you know, when I see a grizzly bear on the on the banks, I'll be looking for the next taxi out of there, I think. So, a funny thing, a mate of his sent me an email saying Greg is more Yukon than the Yukoners. So he's obviously taken to the wilderness and the sense of adventure over there as well. And he's always had that in his veins.
Yes, well, he's previously taken you out on surfboards, and, well, that had a... I don't want to be giving away too much of the story, but there was a serious incident involving Greg, which you managed to get over, but that must have put an awful strain on the whole family.
Definitely. It was a significant challenge. Yeah, I think that was one of the turning points in my approach to life. As well as others in the family.
So what is your approach to life now? Can you sum it up in a few words?
I think you'll see it in the... or hear it, sorry, in the next song. I probably was of the model of, look, kids, you follow this path and you'll, you know, go through, get your university accreditation, get your career work card, get your house... And I suppose when you look back I look back, coming into the twilight chapters of my life, I realised that, you know, it is short and you've really got to make sure that you get a lot out of a short life and enjoy it and get that balance between the reality of getting an income but also having a quality of life where you've got an element of adventure and joy in there as well. So,
very true.
So... Yes, you had these lessons in life that you were picking up, and yet you also had the difficulty that you were separated from the mother of your children. So your message had to sometimes, I guess, compete with the message that they were getting from the other parent. Did that create problems for you?
Yeah, and I suppose, Bill, if I give too much away there, I'll have my tyres slashed when I get back to Brisbane, so I better... I don't want to delve into that one too deeply, but no, I think we both had the nous to remain good parents despite the fact that we were in different worlds, and you know, the children all have a good connection to both of us still, and that was difficult in the early stages, you know, as you go through conflict, the first point is to resent and, you know, blame others. And after a while, you look back and think, well, we produced four magnificent children, and that was, you know, that was a big achievement. So
there were the typical difficulties when you describe in the book about the accusations being made and the difficulty always of proving that something didn't happen. I mean, you can't prove a negative, can you? I mean, it must have made it extremely difficult for you while you're balancing all these other things to be fending off those sorts of allegations.
Yes, indeed. It was a challenge mixing, a broken marriage with taking on a new school and... looking at education in a totally different light than I had because of Greg's challenges. So it was a little bit of a mix of emotions there and a mix of challenges that tended to all come together at once, I think.
I mentioned before that you had a lot of balls in the air that you had to juggle. How did you balance the relationship with the three other children? You've got the twins and and one of them is an elder brother. How did you manage to keep your relationship good with them while focusing so much attention on Greg with the dyslexia problem?
They still are reasonably independent individuals, and they had the stability of a mother and father in the typical family for longer than Greg had, and I think we'd built a reasonable foundation for them to move on. You know, they the girls really, as I've credited at the start of the book, were the quiet achievers in the whole process. You know, they're just their support and motivation and things they did. I remember getting a note from the principal of my son's school saying that his attendance wasn't up to scratch, and I didn't realise that, you know, he wasn't going to school, and his sister was writing little notes forging my name, saying, you know, Ben is sick today, please excuse him, etc. And I didn't realise that till I got the report. So, and she was, you know, school vice captain at the time. So if they had have found out that she was forging notes, she would have lost it. But it just showed, you know, the strength she had in supporting her brother. I think the girls dealt with it a lot better than we did, as, you know, Ben and Greg and myself in that marriage breakup. So.
Yes, well, you talk about the resilience of the children, and I think that's something that parents like to take comfort in, that they do have that resilience.
Yes, yes, indeed.
And yet there's the other side of the coin, and at one stage you talk in the book about one of your students who actually committed suicide. Is that becoming more of a problem in the schools?
Yeah, it's an insidious thing, bullying. You know, it comes in different forms, and I think some of the structures we set up in education really don't allow us to escape from it. I think that, as I referred to before, culture is paramount in a school, and we need to make sure that kids aren't pressured into, you know, exams too much or pathways beyond school. That if we build their self-esteem and allow them to pursue their own sense of creativity, then that's the essence. And but times like that with Dorothy certainly made the whole school community think about what the priorities were. And yes, we could have done better at the time, and I think beyond that point we have done better.
Well, you certainly have done very well with your children. You've managed to keep a very close family despite all the pressures that you've had with the dyslexia, with the marriage split, with having a very difficult, pressured job. You seem to have come through it very well, and you're off to the Yukon next week. So
I am indeed. Yeah. I mightn't come back, Bill, but I'm certainly off there. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to get you back in here, and you can come and tell us about it. But we ask all our guests to pick a song. So, Alan Sampson, the author of Schools of Fish, could you tell us which song you've picked and why you picked it?
That's The Nights by Avicii. And it really, when I first thought about the song, I thought of Father and Son by Cat Stevens, but I thought that might have been me 5-10 years ago. But now it's really encouraging the children, all of them, to follow their own dreams and get that balance in life. And enjoy.
There are wonderful words in this song. We'll put the words on our website, but here we go with The Nights by Avicii.
Once upon a younger year, when all our shadows disappeared, the animals inside came out to play. Went face to face with all our fears, learned our lessons through the tears, made memories we knew would never fade. One day my father, he told me, son, don't let it slip away. He took me in his arms, I heard him say, when you get older, your wild heart will live for younger days. Think of me if ever you're afraid. He said one day, so live a life you will remember. My father told me when I was just a child, these are the nights that never die.
light a fire they can't put out. Carve your name into those shining stars. He said go venture far beyond the shores. Don't forsake this life of yours. I'll guide you home no matter where you are. One day my father, he told me, son, don't let it slip away. When I was just a kid, I heard him say, when you get older, your wild heart will live for younger days. Think of me if ever you're afraid. He said one day you'll leave this world behind, so live a life you will remember. My father told me when I was just a child, these are the nights that never die.
And welcome back. We particularly enjoyed speaking with our special guest today, Alan Sampson, on his book, Schools of Fish. And once again, we'd like to thank Finch Publishing for giving us a book to give away to a lucky listener. So if you'd like to be in that draw, or if you'd like to be in contact with us, we'd love to hear from you. Just go to dadsontheair.com.au. And in the meantime, we'll be back with another program next week. But until then, from Ken Thompson and me, it's goodbye. And once again, thanks to a special thanks to our guest, Alan Sampson.
Thank you.